Right, this is a kind of slightly different cut through. I hope to a degree it's going to seem a little facetious, but I hope that out of a certain degree of facetiousness, there is actually going to be a point to this. What I'm tapping mainly is the literature, or what I'd be describing as the literature within geography. So I guess the non-geographers amongst us might want to maybe develop or not develop whatever issues I may or may not raise. That made no sense at all, does it? There is actually a big paper, there's a fat paper that I've written on emotion and affect in geography, which is in preparation and under revision. This is not to do with that. This is, I hope, just a little bit of fun. This is PTA Salpêtre Hospital in Paris, arguably the birthplace of the unconscious. It's also the death place of Josephine Baker and famously Princess Diana. Just want to note that Jane Avril was here, and she was one of the more famous hysterics of the late 19th century, which of course is the period I'm interested in. Mostly I'm interested, I've been become increasingly interested in around about January, February, March 1886. So this, I'm afraid I don't have a picture of that. What I do have is a picture, this picture, which is, I think, hangs in most psychology departments in the UK. I think if you wander into anyone, one of these, usually in black and white in a very poor reproduction. It's actually in a corridor in some museum in Paris. And was done in 1887, which is shortly after Freud was there. Freud would have been one of the masked, bearded folk in the crowd on the left. But these were demonstrations of hysteria conducted by Charcot on Tuesdays. Every Tuesday, we would have a demonstration of hysteria. This is the bit that most people focus in on, I think. And the main leading characters are Paul Richet, who I've cut out some of the machinery that the ant people, I'm sure, are interested in. You can see who they are. What the hell? What I want to do is reimagine some of these people. I'm going to slow down now. I want you to imagine that this is Derek McCormack. I want you to imagine that this is Liz Bondi. This we can think of as being Nigel Thrift. And any of these other characters you want to give geographical names now, feel free. Which is the one that looks most like Ben Anderson? I don't know. I like Freud, I'm not in the picture. All right, that's what you need to remember. So we all know that Nigel is one of the leading exponents of non-representational theory. His version of non-representational theory really, I think, carries a lot of stuff. There's a big fat book and it's very, very fat. And there's a lot of stuff on it. Really, I think that non-representational theory, to a degree, carries affect as its soul, as its main object. So a lot of non-representational theory, we can discuss this, really has as its test case the thing which is really the non-representational in non-representational theory is actually affect. So quite a lot is actually carried through notions of affect in Nigel's theory. There are other things he talks about like materiality and a full range of other things, but I think it's around affect that it's particularly important that we sort of think about this. Nigel, in his papers, depends on whether you read chapter 8 or chapter 10 of his book on non-representational theory. It depends on whether there are 4 or 6 or more resources for thinking about affect. In the main, however, affect in geography hasn't been kind of developed through Nigel's experimentation. That's why he's sharp at these experimenters, through these kind of gathering together of 4 to 6 to more ideas about affect. It's really been through there's a kind of clear link through Derek McCormack and most of the affect work in geography has been centred around this kind of Brian Masumi, Spinoza kind of arc. The emotional work in geography is, I think, we can centre around Liz Bondi. And in this situation, I think, we have two very different kinds of approach. The importance of this is that they're very close together. Ben has talked about the idea of using ethnography. Both these approaches, like ethnography, they work in very similar, to a degree, in very similar ways. They're both very proximate and intimate. They're very close to the subject, you need to be in a physical, almost in a physical presence of things. You need to be with people. You need to be close to the body. So these are very intimate kind of ways in which they're attempting to pick up, on the one hand, affect, what is the affect of a situation, or versus the emotions. The questions are very different, though. Derek will not ask Blanche how she feels. It's absolutely crucial. He is not interested and is not going to ask, he doesn't care, what she feels. He believes that whatever she says, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter, because this is actually a kind of what you can express that cannot is not in relationship to the affect of the situation. The affect of the situation instead is through the transpersonal relationships that we can see here. So the affect is between all the people in the room. And Ben's term, atmosphere, this room has an atmosphere. It's transpersonal, it's physical, it's through bodies, and therefore it doesn't really matter what Blanche feels, because we're actually dealing in this kind of relationship between bodies. It's transpersonal, it's pre-individual, pre-discursive, pre-expressive. It's the unsayable, so there's no point in hearing what Blanche has to say about it, because it's unsayable, right? Liz, on the other hand, will only ask you what she feels. That's what Liz wants to know. She's going to say, Blanche, how do you feel? What's going on? Tell me more about what you feel. So the emotional geography is a kind of is an orientation towards the emotionality of the situation, which is precisely expressible. Conceptually, it's sided. It has a basis in psychoanalytic thinking, but it's sided very much with the ego, and therefore wants to very much hear about what the ego has to say about things. The logic being that what Blanche says has to be taken and used in a kind of therapeutic way to make Blanche feel better. Okay. That means that Liz is precisely would be in this situation, precisely interested in the different articulations between people. What is it that they say, what is it that they feel about that situation? While Derek will see the generalised context of affect, Liz will notice that it's all men who are doing the looking, and that the figure of the hysteric in the middle is differently placed in relationship to it. In other words, the hysteric and the Charcot have a very different relationship to one another, because they're going to express the emotion and feeling of that situation radically differently. In fact, Charcot was famous for not saying very much at all, in fact, and instead prodding people with devices. We can talk about the devices later for the anti-people. There's some materiality in everything, you know. Here are some questions then. If we are going to pose affect as this transpersonal atmosphere type arrangement, how is it that affect carries between these bodies? How is it that maybe emotions are carried between bodies? Well, I guess it's what people say will carry stuff across, but on the affect side, have three basic spaces, three basic spatialities that are evoked. The first is circulation, the second is transmission, and the third is contagion. And Ben, in his talk, actually used at least two of those terms, fortuitously. Nigel Thrift believes in circulation, by which he means pipes and cables. That's his metaphor. It's like a technological infrastructure. So you think of Blanche as a tap, and she is a... Oh, I wish I had a tap thing wrong. Forget the tap thing. It's going to go hideously wrong. So So what you have to imagine is that affect is circulating through as if water is flowing through pipes between them all. Okay? So there are sets of pipes here. Nigel's point is that very, very clever people, the powerful, can manipulate these pipes in order to change the affect so they can actually act upon and recircuit affect through the pipes. So you think of it as a flow, but a channeled flow. It's not just oceanic, it's a channeled flow between individuals. That's circulation. Transmission, it's as if somewhere in this room, and honestly I don't know where, there's a radio. So it's a radio metaphor. There's a radio of affect, and everybody here is kind of tuned in. And so transmission is more like a field. You're tuned in. Everybody's tuned in to the atmosphere of it. Ben's book obviously is, about thinking through, in a sense, what it would mean to have people tune in. What do you need to do to make people into kind of affect radio? Finally, making much more of a kind of play in the whole conceptual field is contagion. Contagion obviously is a virus metaphor in which people catch. So people catch affect. It's a bit like survivors, you know. It's like 95% of people flop down with affect. This for me is perhaps the most interesting of them, because of course the notion of contagion has been around a long time. Gustav Le Bon famously talked about contagion in relationship to the crowd. Where he's picking a lot of that up from is actually notions of telepathy. So in fact, what we have when we're thinking about affect, and indeed sometimes in relationship to emotion, is a kind of unconscious telepathy around affect and emotion. And there are several questions, of course, that we can ask about that. How does that really work? If we were to say of this thing, there is an idea here that everybody shared, how would that happen at an unconscious level? We would draw notions of telepathy and it would start to break down. We're asked to believe in terms of affect that there's something shared here that is transmitted unconsciously between people, but somehow is never, cannot and never is articulated. So there's an unconscious telepathy going on here, which sets, I think, a set of questions about how things really transfer. How close do you need to be to the radio in order to pick up the message? This all implies proximity. Proximity is the basic geography of both affect and emotion. You need to be close. What happens to emotion and affect at a distance? How do you transfer it over distance? What if people are a long way away? How does it scale up to cities or whatever, or scale down? So there is an implicit geography within affect and emotion, which is always about intimacy and proximity. You need to be close and transmit directly between people. So there are some questions there. So that's a bit of geography. You're happy to move on? Conceptually, what gets produced, I think, where's Clive? Clive has observed that what you get is a layer cake. I've pinched this off the internet. I can't remember who the origin of this is, but it's the closest one to fun. It does look a little bit like a toy or something. But what we have here at the bottom is this collective atmosphere unconscious, the transpersonal, which is below the line here. This is affect. In here, ignore all this. In here, this is where feelings are. Feelings are tacit, not quite articulated yet, but somehow between the transpersonal and the unconscious, we have feeling, and up here are the articulated emotions. In Derek's work, he only sees the relationship between expressed emotions and the unconscious, but unconscious transpersonal affects. But you have a kind of way in which you have this layer cake idea. And this little star six is your transversal. So the basic diagram you have is of layers. This then conceptually begs the question, well, what gets put here? Can here reach here directly? What is the nature of each of these layers? Can stuff push through it? Is it permeable, semi-permeable? If it's semi-permeable, what prevents ideas from going back and forth, or indeed straight the way through? So there's a set of conceptual questions in the layer crate diagram. Just for comparison purposes, This is Freud's equivalent. You'll notice that there aren't lines that go straight across. It is possible, therefore, for the unconscious to go through to the ego directly. Repression, you'll notice, is not a great big line across. This notion of repression is actually relatively specific within his model of the mind. I think a lot of people forget this. The repressive hypothesis of the production of the unconscious in the id is actually only a minor part of where he thought, how he thought things were being produced. This is a slightly different diagram, therefore, than this. All of which is the same. But I think we need to look at this diagram a little more. And this time I want you to look at this and this. Also, but in when you see this picture in most psychology departments, they think the drama is here, so you tend to get this part of the image. This is the most important part of the image. It's always what you can't see, isn't it? This is Augustine, I think. Broglie misascribed the painting to Richet with a T, not Richet with an R. That's my French, you see, I can't tell you. So this is Augustine. As you see, this is the period of clownism. This is the second period out of four that was being identified in terms of hysteria. This is the original diagram. So if you see Blanche's position that she's adopted here is exactly the same as Augustine's. Now, Blanche was known as the queen of the hysterics, but Augustine, who was in the hospital about 8 years beforehand, was also known as the kind of the preeminent hysteric. So you have two images here being produced in relationship to one another. It's not accidental. Freud, as I say, is outside of the picture. When he's witnessing what Charcot is doing, for him, it's a very disorienting situation. He can't quite understand what is going on. How is it that these experiments can be produced? What is it that's kind of really going on here? What is this relationship? The formula that Freud hits upon, and I just kind of had to lay this out, is that that what you have is a dramatization. So this is a form of theatre in which the hysteric and the doctors are co-producing. So this isn't doctors producing hysteria or the hysteric producing doctors. This is a co-production which involves previous productions of hysteria and other ways of looking. So there's a mutual relationship. And this starts to articulate some of the ways in which you can see affect transferring and producing bodies. It's a dramatization, it's a production. But a production of what? Well, this is a production of an image, and this image is produced in relationship to Augustine's memories, but not memories directly, but a memory of a trauma. So what we have here, when we look at this, is a dramatization of an image, of a memory, of a trauma. And that's all in this diagram. And that's what I think neither Derek nor Liz can see in this, is while emotional geographies can see that it's theatre, and I think Ben would see the theatre in it, right? You see theatre. We all see the staging of it. Actually thinking through the specificities of some of these imagings, these presentations of symptoms, the representations of symptoms, so you can't do presentation, you can't do non-representation, you can't just take that out without thinking about what is being represented, the image, how images are produced. Of course, we know of Augustine that what she's imaging here is actually, or dramatizing, the memory of the trauma that is uncovered in this situation is a rape. She's raped by her boss at the age of, 13 and a half, right? That produces this strange formulation in which the next stage is the attitude passionnel. So you get in this situation, a kind of really weird way in which a trauma is being replayed and then replayed again. So this is actually there is unspoken trauma in this situation which is being relayed, but through very specific routes. And I guess that's what I'm kind of interested that would be my, you know, what I'm interested in is the ability to actually see some of those relationships when you or the inability to see some of those relationships when you go at it through affect or through the emotional side.